You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
Open line.
The first call is from Frank in Kempton Park. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Africa.
What's in your mind, good sir? What about the Zulu King would you like to voice?
Africa, I would like to voice two things. The first one is that the Zulu Kingdom, which is obviously under the Zulu King, is the kingdom from which many tribes have migrated, or many tribes have been born that are now in other countries. A typical example is the Zulu-speaking people that are in Zimbabwe, who are the Matebele people. History tells us that those people were led by the Kumalos, who was Mzilikazi, and those people come from the Zulu kingdom, and they are now settled in Zimbabwe. Now, I'm not saying that they are South Africans because they're in Zimbabwe, but they are part of the Zulu kingdom, and the King of Zululand has been to those countries and those communities to acknowledge them as originating from the kingdom. But now when these people are in South Africa and called Makwerekwere, the king does not raise his voice to say, these people are not Makwerekwere, they came from here. It is not, that does not justify them not being documented or being here illegally. But when they are here legally documented and are working here, or they are visiting here, or they are in Zimbabwe, they are not Makwerekwere, they are our cousins, who simply went and settled in another country. There are similar tribes that are even further north, as far as Malawi, that came from here. I won't go through the history. Some of the people that are listening know it, but it's historical facts. And then the second thing I'd like to say is that the Induna system in the hostels, which is now being recognized as an official authority, is not an official authority in terms of the South African government system, but it is the Indunas, an extension of some form of tribal authority. And when the Indunas are in the middle of this fracas, the king, who is a tribal authority, is not raising his voice to say or reprimand the Indunas or to give them guidance. Those are the two things that I would like to say. I would like to hear the Zulu king speaking about these things.
Thank you for making that call, Frank, in Kempton Park. It was last week, was it not, when concerns were raised following a cancellation of a meeting between Police Minister Peggy Cele and some of those Indunas in the hostels in Jeppestown, following, obviously, the violence. And the reason that the police minister decided to cancel that meeting was because the king of the Zulu, Goodwill Zwelithini, had not been consulted. For me, that is concerning. Policing still needs to happen. We need to put in place interventions, surely, to make sure that the violence we saw playing itself out in Jeppestown 2 weeks ago does not repeat itself. And a meeting between a sitting police minister having to be cancelled that he had arranged with the Indunas, in inverted commas, from that hostel because the king of the Zulu had not been consulted? Rather concerning. Frank, thank you very much. Zondo is in Randburg. Good morning.
Yes, morning. Okay, my point on this one is the president for apologizing. That was a good thing for a leader to do. I really give him a certain platform on that one. Thanks for that he has done that. But at the same time, South Africa has a problem that the president should acknowledge. I remember what Peggy had said, that Nigerians do illegal drugs in this country. Like, the drug thing, I don't have to explain it to you. You probably yourself see it on the road. We see it every day. When I came to work today, I saw the drug dealers sitting there selling drugs. Our government should try to address such a thing, that we have a problem with drugs. Right? Now, for us to apologize, that was a bigger man who has done that. But what about the taxi man who has been killed, shot by a Nigerian, where the taxi driver did not do anything wrong? He was trying to save a child of South Africa from drowning in drugs. Like that, I think that taxi man is a hero, like, who died for a South African. We are not looking at that. With this xenophobia thing, yes, there is a criminal mind into this thing. I'm very much against the xenophobic people. I'm very much against anyone that is against a black brother. But what type of a brother are you if you're going to give my child drugs? What type of brother are you if you're going to turn my daughter into a prostitute? That's what is happening in South Africa. South Africa needs to look at that. But The people that you need to blame here is not foreigners. It is us as South Africans, because the police is a black South African. The person who smokes drugs is a black South African. The person that when a drug dealer is arrested has no clue of how to go about in court and everything. He gets a South African. So South Africa itself needs self-introspection. We are at fault. That is why things are like this. If you go to Zimbabwe, there are things that happen in South Africa that are not going to happen in Zimbabwe. If you go to Nigeria, there are things that happen in South Africa that you cannot go. You know why? Because those people, they stand their ground. In everything that I see, you can be blaming foreigners. We need foreigners in this country. All countries need foreigners. There's no country that does not have a foreigner. But the question is, what type of a foreigner is in your country? Should it happen that he's there because of war in his country? Fine. Let him come because he needs help. We were there too. They helped us. Other countries did help us. But you did not go there and commit a crime. So the problem in South Africa is not foreigners. South Africans themselves have a problem. Personally, I would say to you, if you commit a crime in front of me, I'm going to tell the police. I'm going to take a photo. I am not going to stand by any foreigner that's going to come to my country and commit a crime. I'm not going to stand with any South African that is going to come and commit a crime in front of me just because he's a South African. The problem here, it is me and you as a South African to sit down with ourselves and say, where have we gone wrong? It happened in 2008. I think the government there should have said, South Africans, tell me what exactly is your problem. And obviously, you're going to find faults in us. And if we cannot correct ourselves, then we will be forever blaming other people for the wrongs that they do, because we encourage the wrongs that other people do. If I come to your house and decide not to follow the rules, if you don't call me to order, let me tell you, I will carry on doing that until I piss someone off. So the problem is not the foreigners. The problem is a South African himself.
It's an important call, Zonda. We'll hold it there. Thank you very much. How do you respond to the sentiments shared by Zonda? 011-883-0702 is the number to call. Samantha is in Sandton. Good morning, Samantha.
Morning, Africa. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks. Africa, my comment about xenophobia, and it's something I've been thinking about lately. You know, xenophobia as a concept is the fear of foreigners, fear of foreign nationals coming into the country. I'm starting to feel that, do we actually suffer with xenophobia, or has South Africa started fostering a culture of hatred? Because the attitudes and the behaviors that we see don't display fear of other people, but it actually becomes a hateful display of emotion towards other human beings. And what concerns me is that in the midst of all of this violence that transpires, it isn't only foreigners or foreign nationals that are being hurt or are being affected. There are South Africans that are also being affected. And I agree completely that we shouldn't have people coming into the country, whether they're South African or not, eliciting drugs and stuff like that. Fair enough. All of that is true. But in the manner that we've decided to handle things, and just the culture that we're fostering, it doesn't seem like it's xenophobic, but it seems like it's just becoming more and more hateful. And I'm not sure if it's symptomatic of economic climate or the situation we find ourselves in, but I'm starting to, you know, to wonder, is this actually xenophobia? Or have we just started becoming an angry, hateful nation? And that, for me, is the tragic part.
And Samantha, I suppose social scientists will then need to help us here, because technically xenophobia is a dislike or a prejudice against people from other countries, right? That is the technical definition of the term xenophobia. And of course, hateful, or being hateful towards a certain grouping of people, is an element of that, right? We often make the mistake of assuming that every Nigerian is criminal, or that every Somalian is a shop owner, or whatever prejudice then that we associate with those African nationals. And that determines the kind of behavior we display towards African nationals. And we really need to check ourselves as South Africans, without a doubt. But how do we go about doing that? What is that process? It's social scientists who I think need to help us with this regard.
I think so. And I think that government has to play a large part in it as well. Because your culture gets driven from the top. you know. And if we had more lawful people in the country, if we had a justice system that we could rely on, when the taxi driver saw this person selling drugs, he wouldn't have stopped or taken the onus upon himself. He would have had faith in a justice system, assuming, you know, I can't really say that, you know, as a person he might have. But the majority of the population, if we had more faith in the justice system, we wouldn't want to take matters into our own hands, and we would also be afraid of damaging buildings and hurting one another in the process, because we know that there would be repercussions. But right now, we don't have many repercussions. We're actually free to do and damage and hurt as much as we can. So I think there's a bigger element at play, and maybe this whole xenophobic topic brings that awareness, and it needs to be raised with government to say, you know, how do we address this now? Because South Africans have become angry. South Africans were known as happy people. We were the nice people. South Africans say sorry and thank you and please for absolutely no reason. South Africans are always smiling. But now there's this element of hatred and anger that is so present amongst people that, you know, it comes out in many different ways. Now it's coming out with Nigerians and nationals from other foreign nationals. But I'm not sure if we can just, you know, give it this broad term of xenophobia and ignore all the other factors. I believe that we need to look at this entire situation and understand what are all of the contributing factors, not just the fact that there's a Nigerian living in the same building as us.
An important call, Samantha. Thank you very much. Let's try and understand what contributes to our prejudice that we are displaying towards African nationals, the hatefulness, as Samantha calls it, that you are displaying towards African nationals. Gecho, or is it Kigo, is in Constantia. Hello.
Hi, Africa, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm good. Africa, my comment is just to say, you know, we've seen, you know, governance fail in, you know, our country and in many African countries. You know, last week, I was watching the news and I saw one of the African leaders going to the Mugabe residence, obviously, to, you know, give condolences, driving in one of the most, you know, expensive and the longest, you know, cars, you know, when most of the people in his country are suffering. So, you know, the problems that we are seeing, you know, we call it xenophobia. You might call it xenophobia today. And one of those who are responsible for chasing out, you know, our brothers and sisters from other African countries have succeeded in chasing them out. These problems will continue and they will manifest in you know, in different ways. Now it will not be anymore. It will be, you know, now I am in Mafikeng and I can see all these plaza shops are being run by Zulus. Now it will turn into tribalism because people will always find, you know, ways of pointing that blame on others. You know, if it's not xenophobia today, then tomorrow it will be tribalism. So until we get to a point where, you know, we bring back, you know, systems of governance in this country, in many African countries, to make sure that, you know, the money that are currently, you know, are supporting extravagant lifestyles of the Guptas in Dubai are retained here at home and can be used, you know, to improve the lives of the ordinary people in this country. We will never stop seeing these problems. You know, this has been a trend, I mean, internationally. In the 1920s, you know, we've seen it with the rise of German nationalism when Hitler wanted to find a scapegoat, you know, for the sufferings of the German people and pointed out to the Jews. You know, you'll see it everywhere, you know, that whenever people want to find a, you know, scapegoat, they will do that. So this problem is not just, you know, it's a bigger problem where the leaders in this continent need to start, you know, leading properly and governing properly to make sure that, you know, we don't see these things continue. So, I don't know, maybe it is the right thing that the president is doing, you know, sending envoys. You know, I went to Zambia a couple of years ago and I saw in every business, you know, there were certificates being, you know, put on the wall to show that this business is being conducted in the proper way, there's approval from the different government departments in this country. Anyone just arrives and sets up anything. So, you know, I think that, yeah, there's a bigger issue that, you know, that the leaders need to address of governance, and the leaders of other African countries need to take also responsibility for the fact that, their citizens have, you know, are left their countries, you know, to try and find a better Africa.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, and that for me is one of the reasons why I totally support the deployment of the South African Army to the DRC, for example. Because if we are able to contribute in any way towards some sense of peace and law and order in the DRC, we will then not be overwhelmed by African nationals from that country coming to seek refuge and asylum in South Africa. And I'm hoping, Kego, that in looking to leadership to display more of a role modeling and example setting kind of leadership, we're not absolving ourselves of our responsibilities of the work that we need to do to reflect on our own prejudice when it comes to how we relate and see African nationals. Thank you very much for your call. Bongani in Centurion, you want to reflect on President Kenyatta's comments at, was it at the funeral this Saturday? Good morning.
Good morning, Africa. Now, Africa, there's a video that's going around of President Uhuru regarding drugs and how Kenya needs to deal with drugs and all the foreign people that come into the country and basically commit crime. It's very straightforward saying, look, we are going to deal with them in terms of our laws and they're not apologizing. As opposed to what we are doing here, we need to tighten our laws, our immigration laws, our business laws, whatever laws that we have, we need to enforce them. Because it's a problem, Africa. And it's not about xenophobia. It's really an economic crisis. When people are hungry, they tend to fight one another. And I don't think South Africans would have allowed foreigners to live in South Africa for so long if they were xenophobic. So for me, this is really not about xenophobia. So I think I'll appeal to the president to say, look, he must come out with a very strong stance and say, we are going to deal with crime, whether you're South African or you're a foreigner, let's deal with it. That's my comment, Africa.
And a very good comment to make. Thank you very much, Bongani. Sue, in four ways, you've got some thoughts on this. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you talking to me?
I am indeed. Sue, go ahead. You're live on air.
That was quick. Hi. Yes, I wanted to say I agree with the previous caller. It's literally misplaced fury that people are angry, and they're angry with the government. They're angry with their position in life now, and they take it out on people around them. And I think it goes to the gender-based violence as well. I think men are feeling totally ignored, and they've got no jobs, and they can't provide for their families. And I think that results in anger and violence. And it doesn't turn against the right people. It turns against those around you who are weakest. And just one more thing. It really irritates me that we go and praise Mr. Robert Mugabe. I'm not sad he died. I think he was an evil character. Sorry, that's the end of it for today. Thank you.
Sue, thank you very much for that call. Yes, the legacy, very divided legacy of Robert Mugabe is certainly a conversation that I'm happy to entertain on this show. The open line continues. We take your calls on 011-883-0702. You can send us voice notes if you choose and WhatsApp messages to the number 072-702-1702.
702.
Open line.
And we continue to take your calls on 011-883-0702. You're most welcome to, I suppose, ventilate a bit more on the issue we've brought to your attention so far, and that of xenophobia and the scourge on society and what it is that we need to do to turn this around. We need to be kind again. We need to show respect and courtesy towards African nationals and be welcoming of them in this country, I think. And how we have been behaving as a society has been deplorable, demanding then that President Cyril Ramaphosa extend an apology to the people of not only Zimbabwe, but the rest of Africa at the funeral of Robert Mugabe this past Saturday. I also, though, want to throw into the mix the 77-page plan for turning around the economy that was announced by the Treasury, receiving quite a lot of criticism from some of the tripartite alliance, actually, for Minister Mboweni, both COSATU and the SACP, concerned that they were not consulted before that plan was released. And I remember being one of those people who went, who cares there is a plan, let's comment on the content of it. Well, reports indicating that today is the final day for comment on this new economic plan. And this show has had numerous conversations about it, sound bites that you could have used and reflected. Have you taken the trouble to put pen to paper and write back to Treasury and Minister Mboweni and say, this is what you think of that plan? This is how you think it can be improved. And perhaps we need to do less of this. It's a thing about South Africa, is it not? It's easy for us to go, oh, no, it's a terrible idea. But then when you're being invited to constructively contribute towards actually forming an effective plan to turn this economy around, we cannot stress enough the importance of getting a plan into action that will slowly but surely turn this economy around. It's not going to happen overnight. We're probably going to be scared a little bit in the coming years with a recession, not a recession necessarily in the economy, but the economy contracting in certain quarters, hopefully to be followed by another quarter where we're seeing incredible growth in the economy. We are years away from a yearly economic rate that rate of increase that is going to be acceptable, that will be addressing the socioeconomic issues and issues of unemployment in this country. It's going to take a long time. But in order for it to start happening, we need to have a solid plan in place that we all buy into, that we can support government and agents of, the economy, put those in place, respect them, and then slowly wait for this wonderful, wonderful cake to bake. If we're not going to be engaging the minister on his 77-page plan, which is, according to experts, the most coherent we've seen coming out of the administration in many, many, many years, then what's the point? Let's rather then wait for Treasury to put in place that plan, and whatever aspects of it we're unhappy with, we'll just have to stomach it because we didn't bother to engage with the ministry and the administration on it. 011-883-0702 is the number to call.
702 Open Line.
Dineo has called in from Joburg on the issue of xenophobia and their attacks against African nationals. Your thoughts on this, Dineo? Good morning.
Good morning, Africa. My point is, my kids go to a school in JP's Town, which had to open a week later, because that's where most of the attacks were happening. And so, and you know, in the mornings, let's say I'd have to, if I have to buy them a fruit or whatever, I'd go to one of the local shops and just buy, you know, whatever, and then put it in their lunch bag. So this morning I tried to do that, and just to find out that none of those shops on Jewel Street were opened. You know, there was nowhere to buy fruit. There was not even one of them. And the only shop that I could find was a ShopRite Checkers, like about 5 kilometers down. So my, you know, the point I'm making is that, you know, we actually took it for granted that the small businesses that were run in Joburg were run by foreign nationals. And we enjoyed those services. We took, you know, we didn't realize that if we were to chase them out, that we as South Africans have no clue as how to run those businesses. We have no idea who to go to, how to actually, you know, occupy a shop, how to do the stocking, and to actually run and a proper network of shop. I mean, you know, to with the people in the street to be able to you know, provide services and to people. It's actually quite paralyzed. That's the word I can use to describe it.
It truly is. Couple that, obviously, with the fact that MultiChoice as well as MTN stores were being shut down in Nigeria as a result of those attacks in South Africa, therefore having an impact on the ability for those two multinationals to generate an income and therefore continue employing people in South Africa. The small action that we deem small has unbelievable ripple effects on the macro economy, some would argue. So we need to think twice, 3 times, 10 times if we can, before we meet out that kind of violence again. Dineo, thank you very much for your call. Andrew is also in Joburg. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Africa.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Andrew. You're live on air. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Andrew. Well, Africa, I would like to just give a comment about this thing which has happened the previous week about xenophobia.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, I think, according to the way I see my opinion, the South Africans as a nation altogether, they are all right to what they are doing, They have their grievances. They are quite genuine. But the thing is, one big problem I have is that, you know, this problem is, as a national thing, they are getting to the wrong people. They are supposed to take on their own government head on, not come to attack foreign people. Because some of the foreign people, they've got people who are legal and who are not legal. But all these people, they come into the country because of the government. So when they come in and then find that the South Africans are now beating the foreign people, sometimes what is it now, or how does it go about when if someone who is legal in the country has been allowed by the government to be working within South Africa, and then they find that someone has lost his life, which could affect the government. Two governments, wherever the person is coming from, it's going to be some contradiction. So what I'm trying to say is, South Africans, they should raise their concerns straight to the government, not to take on their anger or frustration on foreign people. Because I will also say sometimes, you know, there's a saying that you bite the hand that feeds you. Like in this case, I would put the whole blame on the government. Because they are the ones who are not actually doing their job. We have got the immigration, we have got the police, all together, that's got the justice system. So if these three departments are not effective, people coming to the country, how are they coming in and out? That's their responsibility. Then you find that at the end of the day, people start killing each other, which is something that could have been prevented before. I can say, for example, there's some time I hear two years back, when people were complaining about, you know, these barber shops, Somalis, Ethiopians, Bangladesh, Pakistans, getting in the townships. And there's a one government minister, one said, no, you must learn to live with them. So I don't know really on my side. I don't understand. How can someone talk like that to say, you know, learn to live with some people from who you don't know in the townships? I'm not saying because these people are coming from too far. Had they been maybe somewhere from Mozambique, Malawi, Tanzania, which are a bit closer, it would understand each other. Now, as far as Bangladesh, they don't even understand any language, local language in the township. But now if the government minister is saying to them, no, learn to live with them. That was totally, you know, according to me, something that I could not understand, even up to now.
What would you like to see in place, Andrew? And perhaps let me ask slightly more parochial questions. Which part of Africa are you from? How long have you been in South Africa? And why do you continue to choose to live in this country?
Oh, okay, well, fine. To be honest with you, I'm from just across the Limpopo, from Zimbabwe. And I've been here for almost 15 years or so.
And why do you choose to make this your home, given the deplorable way that South Africans have been behaving towards even Zimbabwean nationals?
Okay, that's a good one. For me to be here, but the time when I came here some time back, okay, things were not very favorable for me in Zimbabwe. I was working sometime, and then I got retrenched when there was a drought. And then I came to South Africa. Well, I didn't give some of my papers. I had my passport, and it expired. And then I had to go through the channels to apply for a legal one, and I got it. So up to now, I don't think if it goes, my term comes to an expiry, I will just have to go back home.
Have you made that decision? So once this particular permit expires, you will then pack your belongings and go back to Zimbabwe because
I'll choose not to live
in South Africa anymore?
No, yes, I will pack and go, but where's my next-door neighbor? I'm still entitled to become, if I want to visit, I'm still entitled to visit. But as far as I'm concerned, as of now, yes, I've made up my mind that I should be able to go back home. And again, point number two that I wanted to mention, you see, also South Africans should know accept the climate, the way we're talking about climate change and economic situation of all. It's not only within South Africa, it's everywhere in the world. But South Africa being a big brother in Africa, so that's why some people have been flocking in. But now the thing is, the resources are getting scarce and scarce. Frustration of people, companies are closing. Most of these employers or running companies are getting out of the country. So the number is dwindling. Everybody is getting the street. So it's now resources are becoming very scarce. So people are now going to fight for the resources. But at the same time, the main core is, according to the way I see it, it is up to the government to control. The immigration can be strong and the police do their job straight, this thing wouldn't have happened with each other.
It's an important point you're raising there, Andrew. Thank you very much for your call. We have, what, nearly 200,000 members of the South African Police Services spread across the entire country. I'm not sure how many customs and immigration officials we have employed by the Department of Home Affairs. I really am not. But we have 58 million South Africans. I'm not abdicating responsibility for government here to put in place interventions necessary for us to turn this around. But I also don't want us to just look to government to come up with a solution. What happened in the instance where the taxi driver was killed, by the way, it was off the hands of a Tanzanian national. He's the one who killed the taxi driver. I don't know as yet what the reasoning was for that action from that Tanzanian national. But that should never have been a situation that then started this conversation where there has been violence reported not only in Pretoria, but in Jeppes Town, in Malvern and other places in Johannesburg and in other cities in South Africa. Because what should have happened immediately is that the SAPS would have arrested the perpetrator of violence in that particular instance. They would have investigated, put together a docket for the NPA to use in a court of law, and for that Tanzanian national to have been prosecuted and found guilty eventually of the murder of that taxi driver. And that should have been that. We should not be having this conversation. And are we going to see a deployment of the majority of the police to certain hotspots so that they can counter or mitigate against what can be xenophobic attacks? No, because we need to be adult enough and process the information enough and, yes, be angry, but look for other avenues to express that anger, including a talk show of this nature, but not incite violence in any way whatsoever towards fellow nationals. Or am I being naive in this thinking? 702. Open line. We continue with that open line. Krish is in Edenville. Your thoughts, good morning.
Hi, Africa. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much, Krish. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Africa, I just want to weigh in on this xenophobic attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. To start, I just wanted to ask in South Africa, how many tribes are here in this country?
That's a very good question. We have 11 official languages in this country, but I imagine we have a very complex tribal system that would extend beyond that number 11. So within Xhosa people, for example, there are a myriad of clans that could belong to different tribes. So it's a very, very complicated answer, I think, that one should come up with.
Yeah. The reason why I'm asking this is that when I look, we all know that it's only, I would say, I don't know if the Zulu people is a tribe on its own or what, or they're different in it or something like that. But I can see the people that are actually rising up on this particular issue. It's only one tribe. Yet South Africa is a mixture of different people. Now my question comes is that why only that particular tribe? So I have the impression like as if whatever that happens here concerning the xenophobic thing, it's like there are two elephants that are fighting and foreign nationals somewhere, somehow, they are like the grass that is suffering in a way or another, like a scapegoat. Because like yesterday we received, okay, their own envoy that have been sent in different countries in Africa, and besides that, in our churches, yesterday in my church, we received government officials. They came to come and apologize, which is not bad, which is a very, very good thing, a very good initiative. But do they think, are they thinking, the government officials, to go and find a way to speak? Otherwise, this thing is going to come back again, to speak to that particular people, to say, because they send Prince Magusuthu Buthelezi, they didn't want to listen to him. But they send people all over the world to go and speak to people, which is good. But if they're not speaking to the people, to go, because they're treating the symptom instead of the sickness itself, that's the biggest problem. There's no amount of grievances that can actually wipe crime here and drugs and all that. We cannot, that's unacceptable. But when it comes to this xenophobic thing, we need, it's important to treat actually the sickness itself instead of the symptom. Otherwise, this sickness will never finish.
An important call, Chris. Very important call. Thank you very much for that. Let's treat the sickness if we're going to rid ourselves of xenophobia in this country. Katlego in Tembisa, good morning.
Hi, Africa, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm great, man. Look, the previous caller said it in a different way, but, you know, we are sick. And I don't want to only talk about xenophobia. I want to talk about, maybe change the tone a bit, but talk about us South Africans being angry and violent. And, you know, when you, I was in India earlier this year, and I looked at how also their social economic status is. You find that they are very poor places. But for the 2 months I stayed there and making research, just asking around on crime, I realized these people are poor, but they're not so inclined to do crime. And I wondered, okay, when we defend things like crime in South Africa and violence and everything to poverty or people needing things, why do we react like that then as South Africans? So it means, yes, it might be a contributing factor, it might be an influencing factor, but it's not the cause of why it is. It tells me that South Africans, we have like a sickness. The previous caller just said it. I mean, yes, we can attribute a lot of things to the government should have done this, the government should have done that. But I think even if those things are done, we will have crime, anger, violence on another level of those things being done. I don't know if you get me. We have
gender-based
violence from people who, the other one caller was saying, men are not working. We have gender-based violence from people who are professionals working properly. So how do we defend that to be a stress from men who are not working and everything? You understand? I think we are, let me continue with the same sentiment of the previous caller. We are sick. We need help. I can tell you that we are not being xenophobic or gender-based violence or crime because of poverty or because of social illnesses. It's because we are a very, very sickly society. That's my take to the whole thing.
Katlego, thank you very much for that call. If we accept that, what is that pill? What is that intervention? What is that conversation on a psychologist's couch that needs to happen to start healing this country, I wonder? Martin in Rosebank, you the final call for the open line today. Hello.
Hi, Africa. Just listening to all the dialogue that's going on in regards to xenophobia and your foreign traders. In the late 95, 96, I was involved with a hotel development in Rosebank. And at that time, the perception was that Rosebank would become a second Hillbrow. And as property owners in the area, not that I am a property owner, we set up what was called the Rosebank Business Improvement District, which is based on, you know, the principles of Business Improvement District. And what we did is we interfaced with all the hawkers and curio traders that were on the street and engaged with them, brought them into part of being part of the Business Improvement District, have them documented, and actually provided them with a location, which is now the Rosebank Craft Market. And that integration was extremely successful. We went on to set up the Central Johannesburg Improvement Business District, setting up different precincts, and that seems to have petered out for some reason. And I think the city of Johannesburg probably should be called to book for that, because my suggestion is that if those precincts, geographical precincts, were operational and there was dialogue between all the stakeholders within each precinct, and that even the foreign traders were brought to be part of the Business Improvement District, there could be dialogue, there could be discussion, there could be integration with the police, with Metro Police and the Immigration Department to document people, to give them the right licenses and you know, to have dialogue that's consistent and that's adding value to that particular business improvement district. And I think the bid, the business improvement district is called a bid, and that could be extended into your Mayfair areas, your Jeppestown areas, and even into Soweto, if there was a willingness between the public and the private sector.
An important call, Martin, and thank you very much for demonstrating to us that this can be done. Thank you for your call.